So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review way.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock, and look who's back. Mr. One Day's Off. Wei Ting. How are you?
One day's off.
Well, you took Monday off.
Oh, Monday's off. Okay. I'm fine. Yeah, I just took it off because it was family day up here in Ontario. I just had some plans. Didn't think
with
I'd
your family?
Back. No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, my friends, which are kind of family. But, yeah.
You know what the highlight of my last 7 days were?
What? Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad was up there. But no, I would have to go back to Friday morning at about 10:06 a.m. When I got to talk with the elusive Mr. Ting.
Oh, right.
Got to meet your dad.
My dad came into the office.
You guys were walking away, and Wei, out of the corner of his eye, saw me. And he stopped his dad from leaving to bring him back to say hi.
Of course.
So that me and Mr. Ting could discuss the previous night's closing business discussion between MVP and Dixie Carter.
Uh-huh.
A man and a woman chatting business.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it amusing how... He always has very interesting perspectives on the pro wrestling that I watch.
I love your dad's perspectives and what he takes from a program.
It's just, I guess he thinks kind of like a child.
A child?
Yeah. In that he really believes in it. And no matter, like, I never have any qualms about, ruining the magic for him and trying to explain that, hey, this isn't really real. I do it all the time. I tell him. Hey, this isn't really real, right? They're not really hurting each other. You don't have to be so concerned about them because, like, especially like when he watches like the women, he's very concerned about the women's health because they're getting injured, which is appropriate for this.
I was going to say he should have watched the Glow documentary and seen a nasty shoulder separation,
elbow actually.
Elbow. Ugh.
But he's always very concerned for the wrestlers, men and women. And so I tell him, hey, they do get hurt, but I mean, not every punch is necessarily going to injure somebody. And he'll say, yeah, oh, okay. And then the next day, like, or the next hour, even 10 minutes later, he'll just forget and he'll just pretend it's all real again.
Well, your father, he always has an open invitation. For a week, you're away.
No, he doesn't.
Next time you miss a Raw, I'm having your dad on.
Good luck with that.
You've got a Skype account. You just set it up for him and tell him, Dad, hit call at this time.
Hey, if you want.
I think it'd be great.
Maybe I'll set that up. I mean, good luck trying to get past the first segment.
It'd be a lot of fun, I think.
I don't think he'll understand about half of what you're saying. He speaks English, but like I don't think he'll speak enough to understand what did you think of that segment. He won't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, I just want a good or bad from him. That's all we need.
I don't even think...
I liked it. I didn't like it.
I don't even think he'll get that.
Well, we can start him off light. Maybe we'll do an impact with him. And then eventually he can graduate to Raw.
Okay. Welcome to try.
Well, today we're chatting the Glow documentary, the story of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. This was your choice, Wei.
Yeah.
You are a Netflix subscriber, as am I. So that
Canadian Netflix.
Canadian
subscriber.
Netflix. We should. I'm unaware if this is available on the American version or not.
Well. Apparently, what is it? Little Egypt wasn't aware that it was on Netflix.
In Canada, she wasn't aware. So.
Oh, okay. So she might be aware that it's on in the America. Okay, whatever. Who cares? Just you can watch it anywhere.
Yeah, this is
not in the British Netflix. I've been told.
Well, yeah, I found, this is available on YouTube for
$3.99. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't willing to pay that.
Well, some people aren't willing to pay for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to, I think $4 for a documentary, it's not a bad deal.
$4, it's how much you spend on a cup of coffee.
A nice cup of coffee, a big cup of coffee.
Like a gourmet cup of coffee.
Starbucks, I mean, you could, you get into the specialty zone, you're hitting $4.
Yeah. You know what else you spend $4? Buying?
What?
I'm trying to think, well, you could even buy for $4. There aren't many things you can buy for $4 anymore.
It's like a tip if you go know, somewhere far with a taxi.
Like a you probably video games used to cost a quarter. They're probably at least $4 now.
When were video games a quarter? At an arcade,
I remember. Yeah.
Okay, I thought you meant buying a video game.
Well, that's ridiculous, of course.
Well, that's why I was saying it was ridiculous. Okay, let's get into the GLOW documentary here. What did you know about GLOW going into this way?
I just knew it was a women's wrestling promotion that was it seemed quite campy to me. I mean, the only kind of precursor I had to this was watching Women of Wrestling. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew
which
that.
Was another David McLean offshoot.
I knew that was very much kind of in the same tone as, you know, what preceded before it in GLOW. So that's all I really knew, but I'd never seen any of it or knew any of the characters.
I had kind of seen this documentary before, because it was featured at Hot Docs up here in Toronto 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I had bought a ticket to go see it. And for whatever reason, I was supposed to go with somebody and they weren't able to come with me. So I don't know why. I ended up going to watch this by myself. It was a Friday night and I was out with some of my friends. And then I head over to the Bloor Cinema at Bathurst and Bloor. And I go to watch this documentary and I buy my popcorn. I got a bottle of water. I'm sitting by myself, feeling a little lonely. And the GLOW documentary starts. I'm really enjoying it. It's like, man, all these characters. I thought, man, it's like I wasn't watching wrestling when GLOW was at their peak and running. I didn't start watching wrestling until 1992. So a lot of this stuff was fresh with me. I was familiar with a number of the characters by name only. I hadn't seen too much about them. I'm watching it. And all of a sudden, I'm getting really hot, like just feeling really, you know, when you get that feeling where you start to get really warm.
Mm.
And then I'm just starting to see like these dots. And I was very concerned at this point. And I was like, what's going on here? I was like,
what do you mean dots?
Like black dots.
Just in your field of vision?
Yes.
Just a number of dots?
I didn't know if it was maybe I was just the screen was just warping my mind or something like that.
What did you eat? Popcorn?
Yeah, I'm having popcorn.
Did you eat that day?
I had eaten that day, I believe. This was 2 years ago. Okay, I have a crystal clear memory of my day. But then all of a sudden, like it goes black.
You had a blackout?
It wasn't. I was conscious, though.
Oh, you actually just went blind.
I went blind.
Wow.
Like I could hear this documentary and I could see nothing. And it was one of the most concerning moments. I wouldn't say I was too scared because I had all my faculties about me. I just couldn't see.
That would freak the shit out of me. I would rather just be blacked out completely and unconscious.
My first thought was like, thank God I'm not driving right now. I would have pulled over by this point. But I had to get up and stumble my way to the washroom. And it was just like, I'm just like hitting my head. And trying to, like, eventually, like, this was probably, like, 10, 15 minutes, which doesn't sound like much.
Oh, that sounds like an eternity.
This was an eternity to me at the time. Like, yeah. I could not see. And I'm pretty sure I told this story on the podcast because I got some very concerned responses from people. But
yeah, I remember I tried to convince you to go see the doctor and you just refused.
Well, I've never had this. I've never had that happen to me again. I don't know if it was just. I don't know what it was. I can't really diagnose myself.
So it was probably an eye issue? Or wait, but you said you felt warm.
Well, I went from that feeling where you feel really, really hot, and then all of a sudden, like, you have the chills. You know what I mean?
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
So
that's what I had most remembered about this GLOW documentary. So I didn't really take it in to its utmost.
That was your review of
experience.
That was your review.
great beginning, great end. Can't comment on the middle.
Didn't really like the part where everything went black.
Yeah, and thus when I was watching this documentary, there was all this new stuff to me that I didn't recall at all. So this was definitely a documentary that I did need to rewatch in order to review it.
So I'm just more concerned about your health.
Was 2.5 years. I think this was 2011, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. I think I'm okay.
Well, let's hope so. But all right. So what did you think the second time you saw this?
Clear as day this time.
No relapse?
No relapse here.
Okay.
But I guess the strength of GLOW, that if you go back and look at it, was these over-the-top characters. Mm-hmm. And just really, in terms of, it was very much like the WWF's kind of presentation of a lot of their characters in the 80s, where they had one distinguishable trait that they just blew up.
Yeah.
This barber, you know?
But I feel like with Chloe, it was even more pronounced in that not only... Yeah, certainly the theme was to stick to stereotypes. You know, whatever you are, John, the broadcaster. You'd be the broadcaster.
And then I get a beat from you. Hey, I'm John 321. I'm on the air. And that was just they'd come up with rap songs.
Yeah, exactly.
It was great.
I thought it was awesome. But not only that,
I could totally envision if this show was on the air today. I think I would look forward to this one hour of Glow every week.
It actually was on the air. It was called Wrestlelicious.
Well, Wrestlelicious was...
It's the same thing.
It was very similar. Season one was very similar, and then they changed up so much in season two. Okay.
But, I mean, the reason why I feel like they were even more campy than 80s WWE or WWF was because they even went as far as to shoot these backstage vignettes, complete with comedy writers writing their scripts, and a laugh track. They had laugh tracks for these vignettes. So, you know, it certainly seemed like they weren't taking anything that seriously. And that was the idea, is to have fun with professional wrestling. I don't think anybody was watching Glow for, you know, five-star matches, okay? It was in Japan. But
and that said, though, an interesting part of this documentary is the part where they dive into the training process, where all these women came for these auditions, mm-hmm. not even really knowing what the project was going to be. It was like
they're actresses.
Exactly. It's aspiring actresses, and this is just the latest gig in Las Vegas. And the ones that were chosen, they had Mondo Guerrero, who was interviewed on the documentary, training these women and just putting them through. I mean, this was more reminiscent of the New Japan Dojo than it would be. I mean,
look, I don't know if I'd go that far.
They had them housed in these apartments. They had curfews they had to work by. I mean, that is.
But I didn't see these women doing taking just crazy chops to the face.
I'm not saying this was the New Japan Dojo, but the mentality was very much similar. I mean, these women were essentially owned and controlled by this promotion.
Sure.
I mean, everything about them was like they had no social life at this point.
I found the curfews quite interesting. I mean, I don't think that's – is that usual for – I mean, not only pro wrestling, but, you know, just a
You
TV
don't have
show?
Curfews in NXT or
– No. They had curfews and, you know, the other part where – the other restriction was that you had to maintain kayfabe. If you're a good guy, you can only talk to the good guys. If you're a bad guy, you can only talk to the bad guys. That I understood. But the curfews, yeah, might have been a little extreme. I felt like this was – it wasn't as obviously as bad as, you know, something like Japan, but to me it just kind
of – It was very militaristic in terms of its kind of execution of what they were trying to do
I don't even know if I agree with that. To me it just felt like these women who didn't know anything about pro wrestling were suddenly brought in here thinking, oh, okay, we'll kind of do this kind of jokey stuff. Somebody's showing us how to sell. They start laughing, and all of a sudden they realize that this shit actually hurts and it actually takes a lot of work. And you know, I just feel like the shock of pro wrestling itself was probably a lot for them to handle.
Yeah, they had a story of Mondo. One of the women was smiling as she was supposed to sell, and Mondo claims he then choked her out when the woman called it fake as they were training during their 8-hour a day, their 2-a-days.
This is the first time I had heard Mondo Guerrero speak, and this guy's he seems like a very eccentric personality, a very loud and almost slightly crazy.
He seems like one of those guys that's dedicated his whole life to professional wrestling.
Yeah, for sure.
And that would be a very good discussion of it. Let's just chat a bit about some of the characters. I mean, I wrote them all down here, but some of the ones that stood out to you the most. Obviously, there was Mount Fiji, who really felt like the kind of pillar of Glow. She was one of the main attractions, just this large Samoan woman with mm-hmm. a ton of charisma, and just was really positioned as one of the key stars of the promotion.
Yeah, she seemed to me to be like the equivalent to Andre the Giant. in the WWF. There's just this big woman who was, you know, very visually spectacular in size, but also was extremely gentle in and out of the ring, it seemed. She basically played... I would say that they positioned her as sort of the most tragic story of the bunch because she seemed to have the most broken down body of all the wrestlers. She, the in the middle of the documentary, when you finally get to see her present day form, I mean, first of all, they spend a whole lot of time talking about all the characters, and then they profile Mount Fiji and they describe her as, you know, this great attraction. And you hear this great, really kind of fun, upbeat, exciting music underneath it. And then you cut to present day Mount Fiji, this woman. We see her in a nursing home, basically in a hospital bed, and all of a sudden the mood gets very somber. You know, we learn that she basically, in the years since GLOW ended, never really... never really moved on mentally from GLOW, never really achieved much more notoriety outside of GLOW. And not only that, her body began to break down. And so they really spent the last half of the documentary kind of telling her story, her present-day story, ultimately culminating in this GLOW reunion where... she finally kind of they set it up so that you feel like all this woman wanted for these past 15 years was some update on her previous family, just to know where all these girls were because their show was abruptly canceled. Not only that, you know, she wanted to profess her love for the producer of the show.
Matt Simber.
And I thought the producers, the director, the editors did a wonderful job of building that to that moment.
Now, also, later on in the show, we're going to have a special guest on the show, the performer known as Little Egypt. I got a chance to speak with her about the documentary, and she kind of discusses the fact of what Wei just mentioned in terms of this show, that these were a very close-knit group, that all of a sudden the show was canceled, the funding was taken out, and they didn't get that closing. And in that way, it's very much similar to, I think, how ECW ended, where they had their last show without fully knowing it was the last show. There were those that were really holding on to the idea Paul Heyman is going to strike that TV deal at the last minute and save the promotion. They couldn't digest the idea that ECW was dead, and they would live off of that fame much later into their careers, and we would get reunion shows, and even to this day, you still get that nostalgia for ECW, and I think that's what a lot of these women, they had never had this kind of fame before, also coupled at a very young age, and then boom, it was taken away from them, not because of, you know, numbers dwindling, or it was just really out of their control that their investors were gone and there was no one to pick up the pieces.
They were pretty, pretty sparse on the explanations and even the rumors as to why GLOW ended. It pretty much is explained that the initial investor just was told to get rid of it. And one of the rumors was that perhaps he was fooling around with one of the wrestlers and his wife wanted him to cancel it. But, all of a sudden, 1990, 100 episodes in, 5 years in, they just got canceled. And, you mentioned how, at least with the ECW wrestlers, I mean, if you're a male wrestler, there's at least an indie show that you can book yourself on. If you're very lucky, you'll eventually have a career in the WWE or even TNA. But with these female wrestlers, none of them are wrestlers. A lot of these girls didn't know what they were going to do after GLOW, and I think a lot of them were kind of lost. And so this reunion, I thought, was a really nice way to kind of... tie everything together. I don't know if it was even initially the plan when this movie was produced.
I don't think it was. And there was, we'll hear more from Little Egypt later. She was the one who planned that whole reunion, and there was tons of doubt as to if people were even going to show up.
Yeah.
And yeah, lots of questions, but it was a great climax to the documentary.
And just like, when you think about that ECW bunch, that original ECW bunch, there's a real sense of family between all the guys from that period. To the point where, you don't even have to necessarily look at this as a pro wrestling movie. Like, it was just...
No, that's what I really enjoyed about this. If you've never watched wrestling a day in your life... I think you could sit down, watch this documentary, and those relationships, and maybe I don't understand wrestling, but I understand from these women, this was really important to them.
Yep.
regardless of what it was. This could have been a tennis club or a curling team, for all I know.
It was just a group of girls who got together because they wanted to do something crazy, something stupid, and all of a sudden they found some fame with it, and they seemed to build, you know, quite strong bonds as a result.
Probably the most famous of the women to the modern fans, obviously, would be Tina Ferrari, who would go on to become Ivory in the WWF, debuting at the Raw show in the Sky Dome a few weeks ago that we reviewed. And she was interviewed for this as well. Other ones that really stood out to me, Matilda the Hun, who was quite the personality here.
In appearance and in the way she spoke. I mean, this was, how old would you say she is? So a woman in her 60s?
Yeah,
perhaps?
At least, I would say. Yeah, probably 60s. Like, crazy segments here where she was eating raw meat on television.
Yeah.
Clearly no fear of salmonella at the time. they show her on TV in 1988 issuing a grandstand challenge to Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. And now does private wrestling videos alongside her husband.
What? Yeah. What kind of private wrestling videos?
Well, these are videos where fans will send in requests for women to participate in wrestling matches, sometimes sexual in nature.
Okay.
And then
we'll review those next week.
I am not reviewing one of those.
Okay, well, anyway, I found it one of the most amusing things to me was when she said she, of all the wrestlers, Matilda was one of the women who had previous wrestling experience. And she had mentioned how there wasn't really a lot of places for women to wrestle before GLOW came around. I mean, you know, women for the most part were just treated as sort of gimmick attractions, much like, you know, the little people matches. But she said that when she wanted to wrestle, the state athletic commissions didn't allow her to wrestle men, so instead they put her up against a bear.
Yes.
Way safer.
Yeah, much, much safer.
Yeah.
And that's not some, like, pro wrestling myth or something. I mean, there was, having just read the Queen of the Ring book by Jeff Lean, I mean, there was a time when, yeah, women's wrestling, they were extremely limited in the states they could run. There was a lot... Famously, you know, Luthez would never want women on the card when he was headlining. I mean, lots of issues that you could tie in that, you know, we've kind of relived over the past 5 years when it comes to women in mixed martial arts and some of the barriers they've had to overcome that female pro wrestlers had to go through in the last generation.
And I sort of feel like there's been almost like a regression in, I don't know, women's wrestling as of the past couple of years, where right now, at least in the WWE, women's wrestling is an attraction, like just a gimmick again. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's really there to be taken seriously. Not that it necessarily wasn't GLOW, but at least, you know, it was the main attraction.
Yeah, and you can look at the current scene right now and... Dave Meltzer just did this rundown of all the television segments in 2013, and it's the women that most people are tuning out from. And that's a huge contrast to just a couple of years ago where TNA, it was the women that carried those Impact shows and would see the biggest gains when you had Gail Kim and Awesome Kong and the Beautiful People. That was the big... big draw on Impact each week. And the WWE right now, for whatever reason, this presentation of women's wrestling doesn't connect with people. One of my favorite characters in this was the ex-Soviet Nanochka.
Yeah, she's great.
This woman is awesome. This character she had, I watched it, and she just played this character so great. And then you hear her speaking without the accent. Like, it's unbelievable that this woman played this character with this fake accent.
Well, come on. I think everybody's got a Russian accent.
I just thought this woman was great.
She was tremendously entertaining. Even just doing again, like, these are very stereotypical characters.
She reminded me of Ivan Drago's wife in Rocky IV.
Sure. Yeah, exactly that. I mean, we might see a reprisal of this type of character again in what's her name? The
Lana.
Lana.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Bulgarian.
Kozlov's girl.
The best was the one woman who's explaining how she was given her gimmick name, where Matt Simber came up to her at a taping and just said, Jailbait. And that was her name, Jailbait.
Jailbait. Some of my favorites were the Housewives.
Oh, they were my favorite. Especially the one woman. I believe it was Chainsaw. They were the housewives.
First.
Where essentially, their gimmick was just everyone else on the roster were whores.
Yeah.
And they were the...
Okay, that sounds bad.
But that's what they said.
No, you're right. You're right. But okay, think about it though. Okay, initially, they were supposed to play these kind of sexy housewives. But then they, you know, obviously from seeing interviews with these two women, that's simply not who they were. They weren't, you know, the typical model type. So instead, they decided to play 65-year-old housewives, and they came into the ring in their big robes, hunched over, walking to the ring, having trouble climbing into the ring, complaining about the ropes.
I love this gimmick.
And then their face full of whatever that cream. Like wrestling face paint, but instead using your makeup cream. I thought that was that'd be a great wrestling gimmick anywhere.
I think it was a very underutilized gimmick.
What was even more impressive though was, you know, how they said that they basically admitted that they weren't very good wrestlers, and this was a gimmick that somehow involved a lot of wrestling. So they decided to shed this gimmick and take on another gimmick where they could just simply rely on gimmicks. And they became Chainsaw and Spike.
The Heavy Metal Sisters.
Yeah, yeah. These two looked like a lot of fun, just even out of character.
Yeah, these two I just thought they were great. I really enjoyed them. I enjoyed just the fact that they got so many of the women interviewed for this. And you had some who are like, you know, have just completely moved on. Mm-hmm. Like Susie Spirit, here we are hearing her with her kids in a kitchen as she's like getting dinner ready. Yeah. And then we have others like Matilda the Hun, who's in her gimmick outfit here at the age of 60.
And I don't know what it is, but like, this was something I even noticed with Dan Lavransky's and Stacey Case's PFL, even back in the day, where they allowed the women to kind of come up with their own characters. And like, there's just something about, I don't know what it is, but like women tend to find so much fun in creating these characters and personas for themselves. I would say more so than even men as a whole, who might in general kind of take it more seriously or maybe be less reluctant to be as charismatic or be as less reluctant to just have fun with their gimmicks. Whereas like this group of girls, it was just kind of like their chance to play for a career. It just looked like legitimately like they were having a lot of fun.
Two of the people that were not interviewed for this documentary were, one, David McLean, who was the creator and really the visionary of the group, played this really over-the-top, cheesy host a la Vince McMahon
of the
80s.
This guy has always creeped me out, at least his honor persona. Like, I remember this guy in Glow. And Wow.
Yes.
And Wow is like a late 90s thing.
Yeah, early 2000s.
But this man looked straight out of, I don't know, 1981. And perhaps during Glow it would have made a lot more sense. But just the way he kind of like presented himself, it was just so over the top. Like you can't, like it almost seemed like a man that was hiding a lot, like outside of wrestling. But of course, that's just the character. I have nothing to say about him as a person. Of course,
yeah, well, David McLean, he has been the link between all of these startup women's promotions dating back to Glow, and he was involved, yeah, most famously with Women of Wrestling, which even had a pay per view in 2001, a epic review.
Yes,
that you can go back and listen to, and one of my favorite episodes of The Law from February of 2001, mm-hmm. where Jeff Merrick had absolutely zero desire to review this pay-per-view that night, which was airing on Viewer's Choice, and Dan Lavransky insisted, of course we have to review it. It's wrestling, and it's on pay-per-view,
yeah.
And it was one of the greatest rundowns ever, and I had not seen the pay-per-view. But I wanted to order the replay, and Viewer's Choice did not air a replay of it after that one and only airing, but it was great. But David McLean was also involved in that venture.
Declined to be interviewed.
Yeah, he declined to be interviewed, and we talked a bit about this with Angelina, Little Egypt, who is still in contact regularly with David McLean, but really doesn't understand why he didn't do the interview. Best, you know, just assuming that he's very protective of this legacy of Glow and maybe not having a trust in the producers of what kind of story they were going to tell. But you would think with so many of these women involved that could vouch for this, and this was an extremely endearing look back at this promotion, that you would think David McLean would want to put his face here and attach his stories to this.
Was his concern, don't you think, you know, perhaps did it have nothing to do with his parting from the group? But
you it know, could have been
due to his rivalry with Matt Simber.
Yeah, and that was essentially the break with David McClain and Matt Simber, who did appear at the reunion but declined to be interviewed as well. Right. And they both just had no interest to be talked with. I would have very much loved to have heard from both men in this documentary. And instead, you were kind of left with these two as these elusive minds behind the promotion. We got to see the characters out and talking about it. But in terms of the philosophy of the promotion, coming up with these characters, that would have been a nice bonus.
It would be like, you know, doing a history of the WWE without talking to Vince.
Vince McMahon and maybe Kevin Dunn, if that's a good comparison point.
David McClain went on to form a rival organization called... what is it? The POW? Powerful Women of Wrestling?
Yes.
So he went on to do that.
And now he's running this Women of Wrestling WOW promotion.
Another one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. What do you know about Matt Simber?
Matt Simber, I don't know too much about. I don't think he did any wrestling after this. I mean, he came in with a legitimate resume in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't really have the wrestling background, but... you really got the sense from the women here. I mean, he was absolutely ruthless with these women in terms of feedback he would provide them. Whether it was playful or not, just, you know, horrible taunting of these women, which maybe was done in jest. The women certainly conveyed in this documentary that they didn't take it seriously. But, you know, just being mocked for a woman being overweight and stuff like that. Things that you wouldn't expect to fly in the workplace in this time.
No way.
But the women... it was kind of with a wink and a nod.
Yeah,
of like, this guy was a real dick, but he was really great at his job.
It felt like there was a lot of dancing around the subject of Matt Simber's treatment of the talent. And, you know, maybe for the most part it was a motivational tool, or maybe there's something more there. But that part I'm a little suspect of.
I think the women, they probably hold a lot of gratitude for this man who was very instrumental in these characters, but at the same time... maybe not the top quality human being.
The rift between him and David McClain basically came because Simber wanted to make it more campy. He wanted to take it into the campy direction that I think Glow ultimately ended up in. But it was David McClain who wanted it more to be almost more wrestling focused, more athletic based.
See, what I liked the most about it was that Glow seemed to be maybe like a 70-30 split. I mean, I think if you watch these shows, and I mean, it's really pronounced when you see this unbelievably horrific injury to Susie Spirit, that these women were bumping on hard mats.
Yeah.
Some of them were really...
This ring seemed much like... I guess I'm comparing maybe...
This was probably very similar to the rings the WWF had in the 80s, which were terrible.
Because my only basis of comparison would be like this, that WrestleLicious ring, which was almost like trampoline-like.
Yes.
And so from that point, I assumed they had learned from this, but this ring looked quite hard.
Yeah, it was... And I think that because the characters were so over the top that sometimes the physicality kind of just gets underscored because of the presentation of it. But I thought that there was probably enough substance if you're a wrestling fan that you got something out of it. But it was certainly, to me, the characters and that aspect, that's what set it apart. That's what I think that sometimes get lost in today's professional wrestling is so much emphasis on the in-ring that you forget why that there's a large legion of fans for a promotion or a character, and that's because of what happens outside the ring and storylines that lead to it.
It's hard to find that balance, though. I mean, the great thing about pro wrestling is that there's so many forms of it, and there's something for every type of fan. But, you know, when you're on a show, when you got a three-hour Raw, you're trying to sell, you know, a Daniel Bryan classic match with Cesaro. And then at the same time, you're trying to also sell, you know, like, imagine throwing one of these, the Nachka versus, I don't know, the Housewives on that show.
I think
it'll get shit on. So I don't know how you really find that balance. Some of these storylines, though, they only show brief clips of it. But, like, if you thought the sort of the Attitude Era was kind of crazy, it seemed like they did some really fucked up shit here.
There were some, I think, you know, especially in hindsight, when you watch, they really made a point that, you know, this show, it was kind of packaged as just Family Entertainment Wrestling. And on the surface, that's really what it appeared to be. But man, there were some heavy political messages, messages.
There was a gun. I noticed a gun here. There was a scene with two hooded women holding back
attacking a black woman.
What looked to be a crucifixion in there, like somebody trying to drive a spike into somebody's arm. There's a terrorist character known as Palestina, and then even a Nazi gimmick, complete with goose-stepping towards the ring. This was something that I didn't expect to see on a show that was presented as campy as a GLOW. I wish I saw more of it in the documentary.
I definitely at some point want to go back and watch an episode or two.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really fun to watch it in context at the time.
Yeah,
it would be very, because yeah, they really made a point to that there were lots of political messages attached to some of these that maybe the consumer didn't even realize were happening at the time. But yeah, there was some heavy duty stuff that GLOW was throwing out there.
But see, like if this came on my TV now, I'd totally watch it. I'd be like, wow, Nazis.
This was like South Park, It's like it's packaged as a kid's show, but packs a lot of
That's amazing.
Interesting worldly messages to it. They also, delved into just how much coverage they got at the time with, frequent appearances on the Phil Donahue show, him even appearing live, Sally Jesse Raphael doing segments on it. They were on Family Feud, Married with Children. Hollywood did a spread for Playboy at the time. Mm-hmm. There was Jackie Stallone, Sylvester's mother, came in as an investor. Mm-hmm.
Legit
investor, yeah. Not a private company that was suddenly under attack. But just in terms of extensions outside of professional wrestling, they certainly existed at this point with this promotion, where it's so hard to kind of gauge because we weren't there at the time to really give a, how much it was affecting outside. But you certainly saw the coverage here because it was very novel for this version of pro wrestling.
And at the very least, even if it wasn't a big deal in the grand scheme of things in the pro wrestling or mainstream landscape, it was a big deal to these women who otherwise would have probably had no notoriety whatsoever.
Also, on the show, we built up to the big reunion at the end of the show. Mount Fuji is really the focal point of pretty much the last half of this documentary. Very poor health going through. They mentioned both physical and emotional problems she went through, and you could just see the joy of her just counting down to this reunion and how excited she was. And there was legitimate concern she wouldn't even be able to be checked out of this nursing home and showing up at the reunion. But I thought that was such a strong part of the documentary and really added a lot. And she gets to meet Matt Simber and profess her love for him and mm-hmm. said, I know you were a womanizer, but I don't care about that.
Her what she says earlier was, if only I could have had that chance. And she basically says, life is short. If you feel this way about somebody, you should tell them. And within seconds of seeing this guy, Matt Simber, he just tells her, yeah, I used to have the biggest crush on you. It's very adorable.
So that was our look at the GLOW documentary. I think that I was impressed with the fact that this thing was only like an hour and 15 minutes, and there were so many characters in this mm-hmm. that they spoke to, but never did it feel difficult to keep track of who was who. Mm-hmm. They had the entire library at their disposal, which was key, and you just really had some off-the-wall characters, and you contrasted them with other ones who seemed to just move on completely fine after wrestling, like Godiva, Susie Spirit, Little Egypt, who we'll hear from later, became a real estate agent. There were some of those who, whether there was kind of that empty syndrome afterwards, they were able to move on. And there were others who were just, how do I make a living at wrestling and continuing to do so?
Yeah, I almost feel like this, I think it was the perfect link, because I feel like I didn't necessarily care enough about GLOW for maybe something that was maybe 2 or 3 hours long that we see sometimes in the pro wrestling documentaries. But it was long enough to the point where you could identify with some of the characters, not all of them, but feel for some of them, like this Mount Fuji here. And it takes enough to give you a sense of some emotion and some heart that that was it's not always there in a lot of pro wrestling documentaries. But I would say as far as pro wrestling documentaries go, this ranks pretty well in terms of production value and emotion.
It was one other thing I forgot to mention was they did kind of talk about the booking of Mount Fiji, where she was positioned as the monster in GLOW, and she was forbidden from leaving her feet during a match. Yeah. Very simple, but something that was extremely effective at the time, where giants were booked to be giants at that time, and we've certainly seen that's a real struggle now to get across in that
And that almost shows, like, you know, despite this guy, Matt Simber, not coming in from a wrestling background, it shows that he understood wrestling quite well.
I mean, this was one person that we were going to... She was going to be a focal point, and there were going to be key characteristics about Mount Fiji that would be kept to her and kind of present her as something different from anything else on the show.
Yeah, so like I said, you know, this is not even so much a story about pro wrestling as it is about just a group of women who did something crazy for...
These women that got this brush with huge fame, and all of a sudden it was over.
Yeah, and then this was them, you know, just kind of looking back at all the ridiculous things they did in their youth. So I guess the lesson is do a bunch of stupid shit when you're young, and then make sure to record it all on video.
A parting thought from Wei Ting.
Yep.
So there you go. Those were our thoughts on the documentary. We're now going to air my...
What do you give it?
I would give this a 7.5 out of 10. I found it a really enjoyable documentary, and... I kind of grade these documentaries in wrestling as, you know, if I were to show this to somebody that never watched wrestling, would it translate? And in that regard, I thought that this was one of the better examples of that. I think that's always what you want to strive for. A great documentary is built on the characters, and this had no shortage of them.
I give it a 7.5 as well.
All right. So now I got to chat with Little Egypt, real name Angelina Attrition. So we're going to go to that interview right now, where she gave us a lot of insight in terms of the behind the scenes of GLOW, how this documentary came together, the reunion that she planned that was the climax of the documentary, and a lot more as we head on over to that chat. All right, we've just finished chatting about the GLOW documentary, the story of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. As we mentioned, it's available now in Canada on Netflix, a great documentary, and we wanted to have somebody on that could give us more of an insight to the phenomenon that was the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. And joining us right now on the line is Angelina Attrition, better known, if you've seen this documentary, as Little Egypt. And Angelina, thank you so much for stopping by. I know it's, you know, this documentary, it got so much praise when it first came up. It aired up here in Toronto, part of Hot Docs, and it's certainly a promotion that it just seems that there's such a certain nostalgia to it that this documentary really represented.
So what are your thoughts? You watched it. I didn't hear your breakdown on the documentary. Did you enjoy it?
I really did find that whether you were a wrestling fan following the promotion or just finding this for the first time, I thought it really did appeal to the non-fan as much. I think with any strong documentary, you can take whatever subject matter, and it's really the personalities that really reach out through the screen to the viewer. And I thought that in this particular documentary, you had so many different examples of this, which was the strength of the show, was these personalities and such distinct and extreme opposites to one another that I think was a real highlight to this entire piece.
Well, thank you for saying that. I mean, when I was asked to come on board and give my interview, it was, you know, no one really knew how it was going to evolve. I mean, we were just basically giving interviews, and then it took like this organic turn, and it became a story of sisterhood, because that's what our show was really about. I mean, we were in the trenches with each other. We were, you know, sequestered. We were, you know, it was a really tough environment, and yet we were passionate about the wrestling, and we were passionate about doing the best show we could do. And then it abruptly ended after, like, its zenith. It was at its high point, and the main backer pulled his money out of the project, and these girls thought they were going home for a season break, and they were never called back. And much like, if you can just, you know, imagine just like being in the trenches, we had our own version of post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know, we all went through that. I mean, we didn't have social media. We didn't, a lot of it, we didn't even know our real names. Like, no one called me Angelina. gal called me Little Egypt, and can you try and try and find someone called Little Egypt out there in the world? It's very difficult, and I just want to give a shout out to the documentary guys, Brad Whitcomb, Brad Thomason, and Brett Whitcomb, because they did not rush this process. They allowed us the time to find the girls that were missing. When I first got on board, I think we only had about 6 girls located. And then it just became a labor of love for me, and I spent the next 2.5 years on a journey to find these glow girls, to get their stories, because we never knew what happened to so many of them. As you saw in the documentary, some girls were, you know, more fortunate than others, and some were able to leave the past and move forward, and some, you know, it was the best time of their lives, and they were, we all had this emptiness inside us that we didn't, you know, until this documentary, this was a very healing opportunity for us. I mean, we used this documentary as a way to heal, if you can imagine what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put your mind around that. So, you know, I love going back and rewatching it, because in a way, you know, it was a coming together. And there's a lot of girls that I never knew from season 3 and 4, because I was out after season 2. And I got to be embraced by them and part of their family, and we all became one giant family, and we all had the same stories. We all felt the same pain. We all had the same, you know, we were all put in the same pressure cooker, mm-hmm. you know, and we all kind of popped differently, but we have that common thread that binds us. And there's just something that I can't explain, and I hope that the documentary represented it, because at the end, when those girls came together, what you don't know in the documentary is that there was no funds for this. You know, there was no, hey, we're going to fly you out and you're going to see everybody. No, they had to get there, you know. They had to figure it out. They had to get on the plane. They had to figure out what, if they could afford to do it, how could they get there? And then they did. They did, and it was beautiful.
Now, you mentioned, you know, the fact of being in the trenches with these women, and, you know, looking back at, you know, professional wrestling, there's always that real struggle that goes on with a lot of performers that, you know, you don't see on screen. It's behind the scenes where people are obviously jockeying for different positions. Those positions represent a lot of money. In this particular outfit, it really felt like it was a team atmosphere here, that we were promoting this cause, this thing called Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and you saw that really come through in the documentary. And was that something that you just, that political side really didn't exist in GLOW, or just something that maybe didn't come through in the documentary? Because pro wrestling, it's a very unique industry unto itself.
Well, without a doubt, it played through the seasons. That was the catty part of our industry, and that was the, you know, that was the ambition of certain wrestlers over the ambition of other ones. And yeah, that was playing out. But at the end of the day, when we look back 20 years later, I don't even think about that. I don't even think like, oh, I remember when she was doing this, and I remember, you know, what she was willing to do to get where she was. And I don't even think about that, because that was just their own personal choices at the time. Some girls, there was a lot of girls in relationships with the men in the production side, and some of them were generally in love with some of the people and others weren't, but mm-hmm. you know, they were doing their thing, and I didn't do that. I was never into that ever. Like, it never was worth it to me. And I did see some girls I thought didn't need to advance as quickly as some other girls that were, you know, really working hard at their training and just trying to do the best that they could. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter, because it's not about that anymore. Sex doesn't become about this story. This story is so much bigger than cattiness and sex and ambition. It's a story of, like, we were pioneering where female wrestling is today. I mean, we were trailblazing. No one else was doing what we were doing in female wrestling. Prior to GLOW, female wrestling was mostly exhibition style. You know, we were used as a draw on a card, you know, because they could pack a house. So, it wasn't, you know, and then in the industry itself, you know, we were looked at as second-class citizens, regardless of what anyone says. That's just the way it was. And GLOW took female wrestling and launched it above what was happening as far as ratings with the WWF and our other competition that was out there, and people were tuning in to watch us because one reason, women are very entertaining. They need the platform. So we were able to draw, we were able to keep an audience, and we kept growing in different markets. Even though GLOW ended after 4 years, it went into global syndication for 10. People were raising their kids on our show. It just had that staying power.
You know, you mentioned in the documentary the fact that here you are, 19 years of age, going out for this thing called GLOW in Las Vegas. What got you to that point at 19 years of age? Was wrestling always something that you were wanting to explore as a career option? Was it something that just this audition came up? How did you find yourself there? And especially at such a young age here, being put into the most, I can't even really describe unless you've seen the documentary, kind of a whole like boot camp atmosphere, essentially, for you women.
Yeah, you know, I had no idea, except that I was raised by parents who taught me just to, like, go for it. Just, it's opportunity knocks, just go forward with it. Eventually you'll figure out what you're doing, but never pass on an opportunity. I never looked for wrestling. Wrestling came and found me. Most girls auditioned for GLOW. I was not part of any casting call. It was coming towards the end of season one, and girls were like dropping out. Like, you know, they were just injury after injury, and the roster kept getting smaller and smaller. So I think the word went out, you know, if you see anyone that you think would be a good fit, you know, bring them in. Let's have them talk to David. And Mount Fiji, I was working in a t-shirt store, and Mount Fiji came in to have a t-shirt made, and she saw me and she said, you would be great. And, you know, you can't look at Mount Fiji and you can't even comprehend it when you're 19 years old, when some 350-pound Samoan,
sure,
charismatic, powerful woman says, you need to wrestle with me. And you're like, no, I cannot do that. You are going to kill me. I can't wrestle you. And she's like, don't worry. We have little girls. My tag team partner, Little Fiji, is your size. You can do this. And I thought, you know what? Okay, well, I'll call my dad. Dad, what do you think? You think I should do this? And he said, absolutely do it. Do not hesitate. You'll look back 20 years from now, and you'll be able to say you did something that not a lot of women were able to do. I later found out, I think he was using it just for the free drinks he got. I'm not sure. He was like, he says this when he goes to bars. He's like, if you don't have a daughter that's doing 20 to life in the state penitentiary, I got you beat. And then he gets his beers. It's so funny. He's just such a big advocate of everything I did. Actually, although I never was raised on wrestling, my family's collegiate style wrestling, and I have two uncles in the New Jersey Hall of Fame for wrestling. So I was actually the only one in my family, the only female in my family to ever get paid for wrestling.
And how did your family feel about, or maybe the actual amateur wrestling side? I mean, was there kind of a distaste for professional wrestling? We always hear about kind of that kind of divide between amateur and professional, especially at that time in the 80s, where it was very distinct.
Yeah, right. You know what? Not my family. My family could not wait for the show to come on. A lot of my cousins were still in high school, and you know, they got to say that their cousin in Vegas is on television, and so they immediately, you know, just rode that gravy train to whatever it is that they were trying to do. So, you know, they loved it. I had so much support. And I never really felt, like I couldn't look at another wrestler in the face. Like, I mean, a collegiate style, or, you know, that type of, I could look right at, you know, I'd look right at him and tell him what I did with pride. I was really proud of that. I was a female doing it. You know, that was my option.
Can you tell us a little bit about David McLean? Because he wasn't interviewed in the documentary. Tell us just a bit about him. He's very, very much connected with GLOW. And in terms of your own interactions with him and what he provided, because we kind of didn't get as much a sense for him as we did with Matt Simber in the documentary.
Right. And for those that get to watch it on Netflix, fantastic. I'm so excited it's streaming in Canada. If you take the time to go out and find the DVD set, there is a bonus reel. And on that bonus reel, we show a lot of bonus footage of stuff that didn't make it to the documentary, but still very good quality interviews that forever lighting or sound issues might not have been up to par, but we still have some great interviews there. And we also did a commentary reel where Billy Corgan, the lead singer of the Smashing Pumpkins, worked as the narrator, and Matilda Hollywood and myself filled in the gaps of what was missing in the documentary. We go into great detail about David McLean, Matt Simber, a lot of questions people had. We were able to answer those. So if you really enjoyed the documentary, please go out and get the DVD and listen to that bonus reel. You will absolutely fall in love with how that came together. In regards to the David McLean story, and I'm in touch with David McLean. Okay, he loved the work he did for GLOW. Why he chose not to give an interview, I'm not sure why, because I thought the documentary represented him really well. But no one really knew how this documentary was going to unfold. It's not like the documentary guys were able to say, hey, we're going to do it however you want. You know, they have the creative final say, and that makes people a little nervous. So thinking that maybe he wasn't quite sure how it was going to play out. So he didn't give us an interview, but I still talk to David. David's very active in wrestling. He has a new promotion called WOW, Women of Wrestling, which is also on syndicated television. And that is his dream for GLOW, because in the documentary you saw that it came to him, you know, there was this coming to Jesus moment, you know, between David McLean and Matt Simber, where they actually parted ways. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it didn't go the way David wanted it to go. Now, if you want to see what inspires David within women's wrestling, go look at his WOW promotion. I mean, that's it. He wanted superheroes. He wanted to have beautiful women, superhero characters, and Matt Simber wanted to have character-driven profiles. And I have to tell you that I think what lasted was the impact that we had as the characters, not so much as a superhero, cartoonish character. The fact that we were so different from each other, the fact that we could have a Matilda the Hun and Mount Fiji, you know, the fact that we can have these women that weren't all beautiful, that we had the dementia character, we had crazy characters across the spectrum. I mean, there's probably no better example of characters in wrestling in a promotion than GLOW.
In terms of, you know, just the nostalgia that this brings up for so many people here, you know, getting to relive moments of their childhood, and I'm sure you got a lot of this feedback when the documentary came out. I mean, what do you attribute that was it just these memorable characters that, you know, resonated with so many people all these years later?
You know what? Thank you for asking that question. It depends on who comes and approaches me. But mostly, if it's females that come up to me and say, you know what, I watched you, I could not wait for GLOW to come on. I'm, you know, watching you girls in the ring, I knew that I could do whatever I want. I knew that I could be whatever I want, do whatever I want, and that nothing was going to stop me. And I get thanked moreover through women that have watched GLOW than any other demographic. They raise their children on it. They believe it empowers women. The men that have come up to me and talked to me about like their childhood, I've had some really touching moments where people said, you know, it was the only show my dad would want to watch. And the only memories I have with my dad were around GLOW because he would watch it with me. And, you know, things like it was like this coming together, and people, you know, took it for what it was, a campy vaudevillian wrestling promotion that was just silly and laughable. But it just stuck with you, and the simplicity of it made magic. And You know, I can't get enough of stories. And I think what surprises me the most when I do get feedback, it's from a much younger generation who may not have grown up watching GLOW on television, but they caught it in syndication, like in third world countries, mm-hmm. or they've watched it on YouTube following like the cult following that we have, and that it still makes the same impact. The message is still the same. And I love that.
Just before we wrap things up, it all builds in the documentary to this great reunion you guys had in Orange County
yeah.
that you really spearheaded. You got to see the interactions, but just for yourself, not seeing some of these people for 20 years at this point. I mean, what did that mean to you? And I mean, you could see it in Mount Fiji of this was just the biggest thing in her world was getting to see all of you people. And I can't imagine just what that day must have been like for you guys.
Oh my God. Well, I have to tell you, I was probably, we never really even, to the very last minute, I didn't even know Fiji was going to be able to leave the nursing home. It was day by day. It was all health related. Were we going to be able to have a paramedic available? And, you know, the transportation of her and everything was like, oh my God. For me, the production side, I was like pulling my hair out. I was crazed up, panicking. There were some people we thought were going to come that didn't come, some people that we didn't know were going to come, like Matt. We had no idea Matt was going to show up. I mean, we were hoping, but when he did, it was like, oh my God, that was fantastic. And then what BG said to Matt at the end of the documentary, and you know, she just, I mean, well, this is all organic. This is all happening organically. I didn't know a lot of the girls that I've been talking to for months now at this point. Like, I'm making my first face-to-face meetings with Daisy, Dementia 2, Big Bad Mama, all these girls I've only spoken to on the phone. I got to meet them for the first time, and it was the most amazing, rewarding experience I've ever had. This is something I've always been passionate, John, not about the trademark, but the legacy, what GLOW represented, what we stand for, and I am very, very protective of that. Not that anyone could be, but for me, my passion has always been to protect and preserve the legacy of GLOW, that we don't have big promotions behind us, John. We don't have a lot of money.
Sure.
The documentary is what we stand on. This is all we've got. So the fact that this is out there means so much. The fact that the industry has recognized us, the fact that legends have come out in support of what we've done, you know, and they put their credibility on the line. I've had Steve Austin singing the GLOW rap with me on his podcast.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is like, people are like, absolutely give these girls the credit that they deserve. Yeah, it was a campy show, but those were real bumps. That was wrestling. We got bit by the bug. Lisa Moretti went on to become Ivory in the WWE, a 3-time world champion. Don't tell me that wasn't serious. You know, that's it. We were sports entertainment before that was even a trend. We were doing it. We were busting through the conventional wrestling mindset, and we were pushing those boundaries into entertainment. And that's what I want to preserve, John. That's why I do these interviews, because I want to make sure that we represent the GLOW legacy, and that, you know, you guys can enjoy it and fall in love with GLOW all over again.
Well, if you haven't seen it already, I very much encourage you to check it out, whether it be on DVD, as she mentioned, or you can find it now on Netflix up here in Canada. For more, you can go on over to Angelina's Facebook page. Just type in facebook.com/theofficialpage of Little Egypt, also on Twitter at Little Egypt. And I really want to thank you for this time. I really enjoyed the documentary. It was the second time I got to see it, and it was really great. Aww. Just to get some background on a lot of it, because it's a promotion that's very well remembered, and I love these kind of documentaries that, for new viewers as well, I think it makes a lot of people want to go back and check out some of these shows. It was a very unique time period in pro wrestling, and something that you can see here we are over 20 years later, and it's still discussed and still something that stands out, which is sometimes difficult on the pro wrestling landscape.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor talking to you, John. Call me anytime. I'll be happy to come back and chat with you about any other questions that you may have.
I would love to. I'd love to. Maybe we'll go back and watch some old GLOW episodes. Would love to have you on again sometime in the future. So all the best, and thanks again for this time.
Thank you.
So wait, what happened to you during that interview?
I was here.
Oh, you were here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can always speak up during the interviews. It's fine. I won't feel offended. So there you go. A big thank you to Little Egypt for stopping by. And we're going to go to your feedback now on the Law message board and see what you guys had to say about it. And why don't you start us off, Way?
We go to Rob from Saskatoon who says, I found this for sale at my local HMV about a year ago. I had never heard of it, but the price was right, so I picked it up. Before watching this, the only clip of Glow I had ever seen was the video of the broken arm, which is one of the first viral wrestling videos I can remember seeing on the internet 10 to 12 years ago.
I cringed watching that. And so I knew it was coming, and oh.
Well, the way she played it off, like it was no big deal, yeah.
Ugh. It was just a very graphic injury.
It was. Being unfamiliar with the problem, this documentary was a short and to-the-point history of the organization, which was perfect for someone who had no knowledge of the product. I also thought the last 20 minutes being the reunion was a neat touch and unique to this documentary from any other one I've seen before. The only disappointing thing was the one guy who didn't want to go on record with comments for the documentary.
Yeah, well, there was Matt Simber and Dave McLean. Paul from the UK writes, I've been hoping for a while that you would cover this documentary. There was a warm human element with the reunion at the end, while Mount Fuji must surely be there with Steamboat when it comes to ultimate baby faces. It was cool to see a wrestling promotion, which was just simple fun. No shoot comments or trying to book for the internet. Sometimes it's nice to have an hour of wrestling where you can leave your brain at the door and get sucked into the silliness. It seemed that creativity didn't suffer either, with all these skits. Plus, everyone had a distinct character, which you got the moment they came on camera. I think pro wrestling every now and then needs more camp and over-the-top stuff like this and the upcoming WWE Scooby-Doo crossover. You will be reviewing that, right? We'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
Might be CM Punk's last WWE contribution.
Danny Hernandez, I'm glad I watched it. I've never seen a moment of Mount Fuji before this documentary, and feel like I've known her my whole life. Not going to lie, tears of joy went down my face during the reunion. I loved the documentary. It hit the high points and was the right length. As a WWF kid, I never knew much about it, but always thought it was a bad wrestling with hot girls. According to this doc, I was wrong. Kinda. There were some ex-wrestlers... that still looked good, especially Hollywood. I had no idea Mondo trained them. He stole the doc when explaining the backdrop sell. The Glow documentary is the perfect sequel for a female wrestling history to Lipstick and Dynamite because those girls brought toughness and acceptability to the sport while Glow brought sexy and toughness.
Next up is Martin from London. I saw the documentary when it went on tour at the film festivals around Europe. What added to the personal experience for me was that I watched the film alongside several European women's wrestlers, including Alpha Female, who recently debuted for TNA. This allowed me to also see how they took the film in and possibly learn from it to add to their characters. Alpha, in particular, took a lot in, and it's helped her as she's won titles in Europe and Japan in addition to her TNA debut. Much like the Nigel McGuinness documentary, the Glow film is more of a human interest story than purely a wrestling story. I was interested to see how the cast came together, especially with a lot of them not having previous wrestling experience, which probably helped with them getting into their characters. I had never seen Ivory before she was in the WWF, so seeing how she handled her Glow run was a lot of fun. Being a Shimmer fan, Glow came across as completely the opposite style of women's wrestling, but it was a fun alternative style, something Wrestlelicious couldn't quite duplicate properly in recent years. One of my favorite scenes was the big reunion, even with members of the two different casts who had never met each other. Mount Fuji's arrival was very emotional, bringing hope to the film. I recommend this film even if you weren't around to see the original product, and even if you're not a fan of women's wrestling. It was a time when goofiness was fun and suitable for the era, and a great alternative to the NWA and the WWF.
Patrick from Ireland. Very good documentary, in my opinion. Most docs are a bit one-sided when it comes to the topic at hand. Glow, however, managed to balance out both the good and the bad. This was especially true of the part of the film that focused on the physical toll that wrestling took on the performers' bodies. Side note, Way, how far into Breaking Bad are you? When you finish, I suggest you watch two shows that are even better than Breaking Bad, The Sopranos and The Wire. I know John mentioned he was on season 2 of The Sopranos, and I would like to know if he's enjoying it. Season 2 is my fave, as it features Richie Aprile, the best villain in the show's history. I'm on season 5 of Breaking Bad.
Jesus.
I think I have about maybe, what are there, like, are there 13 episodes? Or
isn't
more, right?
I think 18? Breaking Bad is like, the final season is something like 16 episodes.
Oh, okay. So I think I'm about 5 episodes in.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm almost done.
Well, I'm on season 2 of The Sopranos. I am enjoying season 2. I've been off and on Sopranos. I haven't been. I went through a big binge going through season one, so I haven't been watching it as much as I had been in the past. Sopranos is something. It's like I don't want to race through it. I'm going to watch it at my
leisure.
But
it's not something you have to watch.
Not right now. I like sitting down every now and then, but I'm really into House of Cards right now, and Breaking Bad is now. I'm just throwing that into the fire as well. So I think those are going to be the two shows I'm focusing on right now.
I know that, you know, these shows are almost designed at this point for you to binge watch them, for people to binge watch. But for me, just for a lifestyle standpoint, I almost feel like it'd be better to catch up and watch them week to week, just so that I'm, like, honestly, I'm just killing all of my free time on these things. So if I only...
You know, you could do that if you had the self-discipline.
I simply don't. I simply do not.
Well, don't tell me what happens in Breaking Bad. I'm going to try and catch up to you at some point.
Okay.
So thank you, everyone, for your feedback on the Law message board. And as well, a big thank you to Little Egypt for stopping by. I very much enjoy when we can review these documentaries and chat with someone associated with the documentary and sharing their thoughts on the whole process of it. So there you go. Those were our thoughts on the story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. As noted, it's available on DVD with a lot of extras and commentary from various women. It's on Netflix right now in Canada. I'm unsure if it's on the U.S. version or not, but it is available in Canada. What's so funny?
Nothing. I feel bad for calling David McLean creepy.
Why?
Because I didn't mean that. If I don't know him personally.
Well, he might be listening right now. And hey, if that's the vibe he gave to you, that's your honest reaction.
That's the vibe his character on air totally gave off to me. Just because this man surrounded by all these women, and like he was like the boss of all these women, like almost like he was running like almost like he was a pimp.
Okay, we should. You really did clarify your statement and put yourself in much better standing. All right. David McLean, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show. So why don't you let us know, and you can come on and chat with Wei and myself. Next week, Wei, what do you feel like watching? We talked about one option. You clearly don't want to do that.
No. We'll do that.
Well, what do you feel like? Do you feel like...
I feel like WCW.
Okay. We are going to review Super Brawl 8. From February of 1998, this was still a huge period for WCW at the time. There was maybe cracks, but still an ultra-successful company. And 1998 would be their biggest year ever. So this features the rematch between Hulk Hogan and Sting. And by this time next week when we're reviewing it, both men could be under contract to the WWE.
Oh, so we could be getting another rematch of this.
Who knows? Who knows? Some
Sting versus Hogan.
15 years later. 16 years later. Wow. So that headlines Super Brawl 8 from February of 1998. We're going to chat about that next week. We'll take your feedback and lots of other stuff. In the meantime, you can go catch all of our regular shows. We've got The Law from Sunday night, Review a Raw with myself and Braden Harrington filling in for one Wei Ting. And then we'll be back later this week. Special edition of the MMA Report, as I will be joined by former welterweight champion George St. Pierre, who is in Toronto this week. And I got to sit down and chat with him. And lots more stuff coming this week. Wei, are you going to be back for Review and Impact this week?
I will be back.
Okay. Well, you can welcome Wei back on Twitter, at Wei0937. I'm at I Am John Pollock. And I think it's only fitting we go out with something from the musical catalog of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Oh, awesome. What another highlight of this whole documentary was seeing some of these music videos.
Here we go. It's no Braden and Wei Ting, We the Law, but let's see them drop a beat here to end another edition of Review Away.
I'm just a young girl with a past, but I've grown up real fast. Mess with me, and you should know, honey, that 16's gonna get you 20. Oh, yeah! 20 total.
Men who see me will flip their lids. I'm a wonder like the pyramids. Here's a wrestler who will not fail. There's action behind my 7 veil.
I stand before this congregation, and I'm here for your salvation. I can help you with the destination. Write a check for your donation.
Bam, bam, wrestling chest. Come on, ladies, use the hand.
you hear my name and all will know that I am the yellow rose of glow.
Therefore, a stupid old fool when I attack. I just don't care because I use gorilla warfare.
I've wanted to wrestle since my teens. That's why I'm here from New Orleans. When you see sugar in the ring, you'll know I'm sweet, but I also sing.